happy Thanksgiving to all of you in Sam Nation land. Welcome to the program. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, your host. And we are live from the Sweet James Studios in an undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain. Now, this Thanksgiving, I hope that you listened to my my admonition that I gave you last week about avoiding politics. Because you might be coming, some people have a Thanksgiving lunch, you might be coming home from it. And maybe you had an experience where you, where things got a little political at the table. So hopefully no one was speared by a turkey wishbone or the like. Stay safe out there, especially the driving. I know, you know, people are traveling in the holidays. It's not even alcohol. It's just people doing dumb stuff. It could be the tryptophan, you know. It could be, you know, the just the malaise that comes from eating a big meal. And you go back on the, you hit the road, you're on the 101 or the 405 or the 5 freeway, and you start just, you ought to be in bed, but you're behind the wheel. So careful with those people out there. But you know what the holidays are this time when, at least for me, I get to spend a lot more time home with the kids. For one, I get some time off of work, and I try to take time off for the holidays. Also, the kids have time off, so I don't know how it is. Like for my kids, they get Thanksgiving weekend here. They were off of school yesterday, and they're off of school today, and they're off of school tomorrow. So it's almost. Well, it's a 5-day weekend, and that's more time with them, and frankly, more time with me and the wife. So there's that, and this will continue really through the new year. I mean, there's a lot more opportunities to be together, and it's well. So this is a really good time to talk to your kids. This is what I'm getting at. It's also a really good time to connect with your significant other, the co-parent of your brood. And by the way, even if you don't have kids, you're around kids somewhere. Somebody's got a kid. Somebody's talking about a kid. You've got a coworker at work who's complaining about what their kid is doing at school, about Common Core or other such nonsense. So now you will have something. If you listen to all of this today, and this is, believe it or not, there's 2 hours worth of interesting stuff to cover. Because if you hear all this out, you will be in the know and you will be able to join the conversation. Because I will tell you, in my opinion, and in the opinion of a growing number of people out there, even from some surprising corners of the, I don't know, of the political spectrum, I'm concerned. We are concerned over how we're raising our youth. Our young people, our children. And I'll tell you, we talk a lot on this program about millennials and about snowflakes and about colleges and microaggressions and safe spaces and that kind of thing. By the time we're in college, okay, it's too late. The only thing I will say about the whole movement of microaggressions and all this is by the in college, you might be able to turn back some of it. But the fact that colleges are so extreme only further cements the difficulties, the challenges, and I think the handicaps, the emotional handicaps that young people have now in this world. It all comes from how they're raised. I see this more than I ever have as an employer of many young people. We at the firm, we hire people straight out of college. So it could, in some cases, be as young as 21. They come in and they are fragile. That is the best way I can put it. You know, their concept of an abusive conversation is laughable. They think they're getting abused, and I know if you work with younger people, you know what I'm talking about. They think that it's abusive to tell them they've done their job wrong. I'm serious. Hey, sorry, and I'm using a totally fictitious name here. Bob, you screwed up. This is how it ought to have been. Here's how you did it. Next time, you have to do it this way. And next thing I know from HR is that person has had a breakdown. They're crying about it. You know, I had a boss one time in 2001, two, somewhere around there, maybe three, 2003, who told me to pull my head out of my beep. A money, money, right? Literally yelled at me, told me to do that. I still laugh at that. I don't think you can get away with that now as an employer with young people around. They might drop dead. Why is this? Well, one of the reasons for it, it all goes back to, this is a thing that started, in my generation. I'm born in 1980, and in the 1980s, our view of parenting has changed. It began to change. If you were a kid that grew up in the 70s, you don't even know what a child restraint system looks like. If you went anywhere with your parents, if you went to Thanksgiving dinner over at Aunt Mildred's, what happened? Your mom had a station wagon, and when you went to Aunt Mildred's, here's how it all went down. Mom and dad sat up front, and you 10 kids or whatever, you know, and maybe you picked up another adult, but the kids were unbelted playing on the floorboards. That's what happened. I was one of the first children, if you will, in this country, that sat in a seat, in a child, you know, restraint seat in the car from the day I came home from the hospital. Or so my mother tells me. I still, by the way, remember this child seat. It was made of hard plastic and it was covered with vinyl. And there was the ever so slightly thin little cushion layer in between of a foam. And I, do you know why? I sat in this seat until I was bigger, you know? Not as big. Now they have kids. You got to be in it until you're 8. You know this? There are kids and a certain height. There are some kids out there who don't get height until junior high. Theoretically, according to the state of California, they should be showing up to the 7th grade in a child seat. Can you talk about emotional scarring? I'm dead serious about this. So anyway, I remember my kid seat because it was that vinyl and it would get so hot in the car that my mom would, you got to sit in the seat, and it would burn me. Anyway, vivid childhood experiences from back when I was 6, maybe 7. All right. What happened in the 1980s? One of the things that happened, in my opinion, is that we started becoming very aware of child abductions, of statistics, of progress, okay? The economy got better. This is a very important thing. I'm not blaming Reagan entirely for this. But the economy got better. People had more disposable income. People became more educated. People, as part of that process, when you're not worried as much about your job and about feeding your family, you begin worrying about other useless stuff. You mix that in with some high-profile child kidnapping cases, new reports and statistics from the NTSB and DOT, agencies responsible for tracking, for example, highway deaths, advances in technology. People began getting obsessed with having airbags in cars. Personal injury lawyers, you know, fighting companies who made, well, very unsafe cars that, you know, if you crashed into them, they'd blow up, which is a problem. All this stuff happening made parents really afraid and almost paranoid about their children playing outside unsupervised, of their children doing almost virtually anything that was potentially unsafe. All I'm telling you is, if you want an illustration of this, take from your mind a remembrance, a memory, a photograph, a picture, an image of the jungle gym that you played on as a kid, and now go to any new park, any new elementary school, and look at what sad garbage the kids have to play with these days. Every part of it is designed to not hurt the kid. And I would say when you look at the fine print, it's literally designed for the kid not to have any fun. I came home with splinters when I was playing on the big apparatus at my elementary school. And the one that they have there now is pathetic, frankly. But all of this, we became obsessed with safety. We became obsessed with protecting our kids from any conceivable and inconceivable harm. And all of a sudden, our kids lost independent play. They lost being allowed by their parents to walk to school, for example, to be out in the street unsupervised, to be in the park unsupervised. And unsupervised play, for the most part, is dead. Now you're going, Sam, why do I care? Why am I listening to this? Why are you telling me this? I let my kid play in the driveway once a week. I'm good. Here's the thing. Kids need time away from us, the adults. If we are always around, our kids are never solving the problems that they need to solve on their own. That teaches them how to work through emotional issues when they are adults. Problem solving. Okay? Conflict resolution. These are the type of things that differentiate, in my world as an employer, a great employee, a great, you know, strong person who has a future, and a loser. If you can do those two things, man, are you a gift to the universe. If you can't, you are honestly going to struggle, because the real world requires that you have these skills. That, so far as I can tell, has not changed and is not changing, because we still, as consumers in this competitive economy, have a high expectation and a high demand of what we want from service industries, for example. We don't want a waitress that comes to our table and we give them, take an order and say, oh, I'm really sorry, miss, but I asked for, this is not medium rare. This steak is well done. And have her burst into tears right there at the table. That we don't want that. You wouldn't go back to that restaurant, would you? No, of course not. So you see how we are setting our kids up for failure. I'm going to go through this because I understand there's a bit of a leap here. You're wondering what all of this. I'll give you an example here, a quick one. And then after the break, I'll continue with this because, for example, one of the biggest, most rapidly growing industries in our country is organized sports for kids. So, you know, Little League, fill in the blank. No, I know you had Little Leagues back in the day, too. Trust me, if you don't have kids right now, you wouldn't believe what kind of a big bucks business it is for organized after school sports for kids. And what an incredible time commitment it is for parents. But all of this, what happens when the kid, what's the difference between the kid playing on the playground outside with his buddies versus playing, let's say, in a baseball league after school? You know what the difference is? There's a critical, important, distinguishing characteristic between these two activities. Well, the sports activity, who sets the rules? Who organizes the terms of engagement among the group? The adults, correct? The adults are doing it, right? It's the coaches and the refs and whatever parent volunteers there are. So the entire interaction there, whatever happens on that field or during practice or whatnot, during the game, during practice, it's all determined by adults. And the kids look up to the adults to solve their problems. You've got a referee. The referee literally decides who's right and who's wrong, who's in and who's out. This is very different from a pickup game of basketball that the kids are playing out there. And when there's a conflict and a problem of what was an illegal shot or not, the kids have to duke it out. And I'm not saying physically, but I'm saying they got to have it out. They've got to discuss it. But free play versus organized sports, the problem with organized sports is the adults are in charge. And all of this, the authority figures are the adults. And we're raising a group of young children, kids, into adulthood who are accustomed to having authority figures solve their problems for them. This is not good. And I think one of the reasons I'm talking about it is I'm hearing more stories come out of my kids' elementary school about conflicts and things, and I'm always surprised the parents want to solve the problems. And I'm like, well, anyway, I'll tell you what I think after the break, because I have a very totally different approach to this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back right after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
I have to protect the names, protect the innocent by changing names. I'm not going to use any names. Sam Rogowski here, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Happy Thanksgiving. Hope you're enjoying your holiday. I'm talking about our kids, our youths, and having a discussion. We are having a friendly chat here about who we are as parents and what kind of adults we want our children today to someday become. Let me say it this way. My daughter is in the first grade, and there is already drama in the first grade. It starts young, and in my kids' elementary school, I think it's a fairly representative population of the type of people that you would know, okay? We have great people there. And I will tell you, for the most part, with great intentions. There's no, there are no bad intentions. The meddling that parents do in their kids' life that handicaps their kid from later becoming an independent problem solver is not born of bad intentions. It's not. These are good intentions, because you don't want to see your kid hurt. You don't want to see your kid cry. You don't want to see your kid bullied. Bullying, by the way, let me say a word about bullying. I think Daniel's probably been bullied, but I hate the word. I just absolutely hate the word. It's so subjective. What the heck is bullying? Bullying when I was a kid was the guy that was, 2 feet taller than you, that smacked you in the face and took your milk money. So technically it wasn't bullying. It was armed robbery. I mean, as in my third grade world, might as well. It was a stick up. It was assault. But bullying today are words, are intimidation, is considered. Well, it's also a lot of times is based on the feelings of the victim. And as we go through the hour here and next hour, I'm going to explain that a little bit, because that's a huge part of the problem, too. We're using a subjective standard for a lot of this stuff and not an objective one. But at any rate, bullying. I think my kid, by today's modern definition, has probably been bullied. My son, he's in the fourth grade. My daughter's in the first grade. And there's some stuff going on there, which is what triggered some of my thoughts on this topic. But my son has been bullied. You know what advice he gets from me at home? Now you tell me, am I a terrible person? The advice he gets from me is, solve it. I don't want to hear about it. I mean, I will talk to him and role play. I'll do that. Maybe you should say this. Maybe if the kid, says this to you, and I get in trouble, by the way, from the wife, because I will give him advice. I'll tell him to insult the kid back. I mean, oh, Sam, you can't do that. He's going to get in trouble. I go, fine, let him end up in the principal's office. It's not the worst thing that'll happen. Deal with it. Come up with a comeback. And if somebody punches you in the face, punch him back. By very unpopular advice. The solution, however, is not for me to helicopter in as a parent and to mediate the conflict between my son and, for example, this other boy in his year, who was in his class a couple years. Great kid. I like this kid and I love his parents. And there was a conflict. I don't know who's right or wrong. How am I supposed to determine that? My heart aches for my son because he's in a bad situation and he's crying at home. But my job as a parent is to build him up, not to fix the problem for him. And I know in the long run, he will be better off if he fixed it himself. If he picked up some life skills, if he learned how to deal with hurt feelings. Because, you know, hate to break it to you, the world is filled with nasty people who are going to hurt your feelings. So, all right, I'll get more into this when we come back. We got the news up next. Hope you're having a happy Thanksgiving. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC this Thanksgiving Day. We've got some kids here that need us to rethink parenting. And one of the critical things, that I was describing, one of the main things is we've got to have children resolve conflicts on their own. And if you have a kid in elementary school, you've got a niece or a nephew or a coworker who's got kids, you have heard about this. This is an issue. The media talks about it as a bullying problem. I talk about it as a kids being mean to each other and parents try to solve the problem for them problem. Do you see the difference? You know when I think adults need to get involved? When there is gross bodily harm threatened. I think that if a child is threatening a student with, with a gun, with a knife, if there's drugs involved, if there's, scuffs, broken bones, I'm actually that laissez-faire because I think we were a better society where we dealt with our bullies, where we learned how to confront aggressive people. And my generation, I fear, I was raised in the 80s, already at the beginning of this movement that embraced two very damaging ideas. One, our kids need to be protected from anything and everything we possibly can protect them from. And on the other hand, the other thing, very dangerous equally, I'll talk more about it next hour, is the self-esteem movement. Started in the 80s. And these two combined created a world where kids looked needed, right? Were taught to need to require adults to mediate conflicts. And also were told that their feelings mattered above everything and everyone's a winner and really took away a lot of that competitive drive. So I was mentioning at my kids' elementary school, and again, not naming anybody in particular, but there's some drama going on in my daughter's class and some bullying. And I think that the parents need to all relax. That is what I told my son when I remember. Was it last year or the year before? I don't remember. But he was having some trouble with another boy. Totally normal stuff. Daniel was getting teased. Do you want me to tell you what it was? This is, by the way, what's tragic to a kid, right? I hope my kids are not listening right now. What's tragic to a kid, it might seem funny to us as adults, but to a kid, this is very, very traumatizing. This boy was teasing Daniel that his dad is rich because he drives a nice car. Talking about me. And I thought it was hilarious because when I was Daniel's age, some 20-odd years prior, at the same exact elementary school, he goes to my elementary school. So that's what makes all this really funny to me. when I was his age, I was teased for being too poor because my mom drove a really atrociously horrible looking car. And I got teased for that. So I sit him down and I said, you know what? Kids will find something to tease you about. It doesn't matter. You could be too tall. You could be too short. You can be too fat. You can be too skinny. You can be too pale or too dark. Kids are figuring out their differences. This is one of the things that kids do at your age. So you know what? If he's making fun of you for something, I don't know. Either you don't let it bother you or engage and make fun of him for something and show him what it feels like to be teased. And then I really hope his parents are not listening because I gave Daniel some suggestions of what type of insults to use on this kid. And you know what, though? It kind of worked. I gotta say it kind of worked because, you know, the problem is working itself out. I'll put it that way. But this is all stuff we need to let our kids do and solve on their own. Okay, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Happy, happy Thanksgiving to all of you out there from Sweet James Bergner and his team. They want me to tell you how much they hope you're having a great and happy and satisfying Thanksgiving. Be safe out there on the road. Here's the scoop in the story. You may get into trouble out there. Hopefully you don't, but you may. Some guy who's had way too much turkey and should be asleep at home in bed can be doing stupid things out there on the road. If that happens, don't try to do it on your own. Don't ruin the rest of your holidays dealing with the insurance company. Call James, call his firm, let them take care of you, okay? Let them handle it. You enjoy your holidays. Worry about your family. Worry about the things that are important. Let James take care of your personal injury case. Whatever it might be, let him handle it. 1-800-881-2021. 1-800-881-2021. No recovery, no fee. It doesn't cost you any money up front. James is easy to talk to. Free consultation. All that good stuff. Make it easy. Call him. 800-881-2021 or visit his website, sweetjames.com. Everything kids touch, see, hear, lick can hurt them. This according to Reason Magazine. I love that. I love the lick part especially. Thinking back to all the things I've licked as a kid. All right, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. On this Thanksgiving Day holiday, I hope you guys are having a wonderful and safe Thanksgiving. Hold your kids close. Enjoy your family. This is what today is all about. I love Thanksgiving in part. Why? You know why? It is the most low-pressure holiday. The most stressful thing about Thanksgiving is making sure you don't overcook a turkey. It really is. As reading this article, I think last week sometime, where Martha Stewart was explaining how her worst Thanksgiving, she was in tears because she ruined the turkey or some nonsense like that. That's the worst thing that can happen today. In the grand scheme of things, right? You don't have to worry about gifts. It's not like Christmas. Christmas is stressful. Did I forget somebody? Did I get them the right gift? Did I? No. Today is just a day for eating a turkey, even if it's burned, right? There's somewhere in it you're going to find some meat that is edible. And enjoying company of your crazy family. So spend time with your kids. But here's a suggestion today. You're home all weekend, right? If you live in a street that, you know, it's, you know, not an off-ramp from a major freeway, let your kids play outside, okay? I remember years ago, you guys remember Dr. Laura? I grew up listening. Whenever I was off from school, I'd listen to Dr. Laura. And I've always loved radio, so I've listened to all these shows that you may well remember. And I remember her talking about some woman was worried about letting her kid go out to the movies with a friend. And the you know, I don't know if you remember doing that as a kid. I'm sure you went to the movies with a friend. And this parent was just so nervous about it. So, you know, in the end, Dr. Laura gave this lady some really good advice, which was you take him to the mall, drop him off, let him have a good time. And you know what? You can get a ticket to the movie when the movie starts and you can sit in the back of the movie theater and just be there. But the most important thing is the subjective experience of your child. Your child needs to feel like they have some unsupervised time. And your intervention should only be if literally Charles Manson resurrects from the dead and comes back and, you know, is, yeah, comes after your kid. Let them get into trouble. Let them throw jelly beans at the patrons in front of them. Let them spill their drink. Let them act like jerks. And let other patrons around them tell them what they think of that behavior. Let them get corrective, you know, experiences, conflict. Let them resolve that in that environment. Because all of these things are kids testing their boundaries in order to determine what, figure out for themselves what is appropriate behavior. And if unless you want your kid to turn into Harvey Weinstein or Al Franken, you want a kid to know what appropriate behavior is. And they've got to be allowed to fail. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KVC.
Talk Radio 790 KABC.
There is an elementary school called Mesa Elementary. I believe it's in Boulder, Colorado. Students get a list of items they could not bring to the science fair. Do you know what they included? Chemicals, plants and soil, and organisms living or dead. It's the flipping science fair. No wonder we don't know. We literally are last in the world in science and biology. This is ridiculous. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Oh, my goodness. This is a Thanksgiving parenting workshop. So far this hour, we've covered why it's important. It's almost more important that your kid be given free time to play unsupervised without adults with other kids than it is to be in organized sports. Why? Because organized sports, all conflict is resolved for the most part by adults, by coaches, by refs, by volunteers. In unsupervised play, you're not around to mediate the conflict. The kids have to figure out how to do it. And guess what? When left to their own devices, they generally do. It's a crazy thing. Richmond, Washington, they got rid of all the swings on their school playgrounds. Swings! My girls literally, I mean, all they asked me for is a swing set in the backyard. And I'm about to give in. The only reason I'm not doing it is because it's ugly as heck. And I don't know, like, I'm a little OCD. So, I don't know the idea. But you know what? That's what they like to do. They like to swing. And guess what? You know what happens sometimes on a swing set? I'm going to blow your mind right now. Kids fall off of it. You know what's even worse than that? Sometimes kids on a swing set, they will deliberately abandon ship when the swing is, you know, all the way in the furthest, most extended position. It's called jumping off a swing set. I remember doing this in elementary school. I would wait for the playground supervisor to turn her head. It was like the great Alcatraz jailbreak. You know, I'd wait. What was her name? I forgot. Gosh, it's tip of my tongue. Well, one of the ladies' names was Mrs. Aston, and we thought that name was pretty funny. But yeah, she turned her head. The minute her head turned, we'd all go bing. We'd fly off the swing. One time, I twisted my ankle. I mean, unbelievable. Parks are getting rid of grass because grass is not safe to play in. I'm telling you, these latchkey kids, I fear for them. I fear for them. But the other part of this, and this is what I want to get into next hour, is the entire movement that everybody's a winner, that self-esteem matters, how you feel is more important than anything else. That, I think, is one of the greatest plagues to our overall emotional well-being as eventual adults. And I think that if it's not taken care of, and it's not right, we got to come to terms with this. And the fact that magazines like Reason, or publications of online publications like Reason, they're fairly, you know, left wing in some respects, that they're talking about this is encouraging, because I think these are cyclical trends. I think these are trends that ebb and flow, and I think we are at the peak of it. We are headed for a crash, because all of this junk science about raising kids has come to full bloom on our college campuses, and everybody's laughing at it. Everybody's laughing at it. The only people that don't think it's funny is the people, you know, that are making money off of it on college campuses. All right, don't go anywhere. We got the news up next. Happy Thanksgiving. I'm back in just a few minutes. Don't go anywhere.
Talk Radio, 790 KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Gobble, gobble, happy Turkey Day. Hope your Thanksgiving is going fantastic. We are talking about the children of tomorrow. Now, if you're a Hillary Clinton fan, if you are, speaking of which, I'll tell you what just happened to me at my kids' elementary school. I am walking my kids up to school, and so I'm actually helicopter parenting. I got caught red-handed. Here I am. I'm walking them up to school when they ought to be walking the mile and a half from the house to school, uphill both ways in the snow, sleet, and rain. Anyway, so I'm walking up, and I see a SUV that is pulling up to the curb to drop some kids off. And the SUV, this poor, unfortunate, innocent SUV, continues to be defiled by a large "I'm with her" Hillary Clinton sticker. So I am walking up, and at this point, I've joined up with a parent. Now, this parent, I know, I think she's pretty left-wing, but knows, you know, who I am and what what I stand for. But here's the most important thing. We like each other. She and my wife are great friends, and you know, we're able to joke. So I look at her, and I say, wow, still a Hillary sticker. I mean, you'd think by now the sticker would have come off. Right, and then that's a separate issue. But right, by now, the people with, you know, there's people that still have, you know, Bush Reagan stickers on their cars, all faded and everything. It's like, all right, the show's over. So anyway, she goes, yeah, totally funny. I mean, maybe it's super glued on. Maybe Hillary made her stickers so they don't come off. We laugh about it. And right then, I look at this kid standing up looking at me, and I realize he's the kid that got out of the car. Ugh. My heart broke. I was like, oh, God, I'm making fun of your mom. Bad dad. This is the kind of horrible stuff I do at my kids' school. Anyway, the fragile generation. This is an article out of Reason.com. Bad policy and paranoid parenting are making kids too safe to succeed. And I'm reading this, and of course, I'm totally agreeing with it, because I'm reflecting on my life as a kid. Also reflecting on my kids now in this world growing up, and the kind of things that other parents are doing, and the ways these parents are interfering, protecting, all good intentions, right? But preventing these kids from getting hurt, from experiencing conflict, from resolving conflict on their own, et cetera, et cetera. And then I also have the perspective, which I don't think is entirely unique, but it's certainly mine to share with you, as an employer of young people that have been products of this type of upbringing. I see people on a almost, you know, weekly basis have meltdowns over criticisms, which of course is not good because criticisms will come. Your boss eventually, if you are in high school, and I know I have some young fans. In fact, I know even some elementary school fans that listen to this program. So if you're in elementary school, I have some news for you. Eventually, you'll be in middle school. If you're in middle school, I got some news for you. You will eventually be in high school. If you're in high school, I've got more news for you. I don't know if you can grasp where this is going, but you're eventually going to be in college, a trade school, or a job. Sooner than later, you will have a boss, I hope, because having a boss is a very important part of coming of age as well. Because suddenly that boss is not necessarily motivated by your feelings. That boss is 100% motivated by what you can do for him or her. It's what's in it for me. It's called making money. This is what capitalism is about, and it's not a bad thing. Because in that process of making money, that business owner, that boss, is not just looking for he's looking for a bottom line that's good for him. But to get to that bottom line, whatever product or service that business is in business to do, to give, to provide, it has to be competitive. It has to be the best, or else it doesn't survive, or doesn't survive well. And in that process, when you leave your job and you go to a burger stand to spend some of your money, or you go and you want to, I don't know, get your car fixed, or you have to go to a bank to deposit your check, your hard-earned money that's left over after the government steals half of it. When you do that, what happens? You want good services, and all those businesses operate on the same principle, or at least theoretically ought to. And all this requires you to not be overly sensitive. Because your boss eventually, unless you are just some freak of nature, you will mess up. You will screw up. I know James Bergner. You know his whole story about what he used to do as a to work his way through school. He was a baggage handler for Delta. So he was literally, James Bergner was literally picking up bags to work his way. He was at Salt Lake City International Airport, picking bags, loading them onto planes and off of planes. And one of the things he talked to, one of the things that they do on the ramp is move around the jetway. The little ramp that they pull up to the airplane, the little hose attaches, almost looks like a suction to the plane, and then little thing comes out and you can walk right off the airplane into the terminal. Well, you know, the airplane also has all these little things that come off of it, they're called pitot tubes, measuring air temperature. Very expensive. You knock one of those things off, the airplane's out of commission for a while. An incident needs to go to the FAA, et cetera. If you are a ramp guy and you knock over a pitot tube, your boss is going to yell at you because it literally is going to mess up thousands of people's day. Thousands of people will be affected. That airplane is out of commission for the next foreseeable future. For days, people are affected. I worry that in today's world, you yell at a kid for, hitting the pitot tube on the ramp, putting an airline and thousands of people into total misery. You yell at that kid, and the kid's going to run away and report you to HR and file a harassment report and file a discrimination complaint. We can't have this generation of people out there. And part of the problem isn't just allowing kids free play and mediating their own conflicts. Other part of it is this damn self-esteem movement. And this is the greatest lie ever told to me as a kid. Greater lie than even Santa Claus is real. No, that's still true. That's still true. The greatest lie ever told to me is be yourself. I had a number of teachers who told me this, and thank goodness, two parents who never told me to just be myself. They told me to be the best. And be the best requires, by, you know, just inherent in that definition, requires comparison of yourself to others. I frequently, I have this conversation with people at work all the time. So I'll be speaking to somebody about their position, and I will say, look, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I have 10 people in the same job as you, and you are not performing as well as the others. And I have to compare you to the others. Yeah, that's how the real world works. But in school and in sports, not only is everything, now every conflict is mediated by adults. Every confrontation is solved with parent and intervention. But also, person in eighth place still gets a damn trophy. This is like the worst thing that we're doing to kids, because we don't want them to have hurt feelings from failure. The only way you will have a kid that wins at anything in life, that succeeds in any meaningful way, is if they've tasted failure. This is why kids, by the way, that get endless financial support from their parents rarely become successful. This is why birds, a mama bird, knocks the little baby bird out of the nest. The bird goes, drops, you know, on the ground and has to figure out how to fly. I don't think it's because birds are naturally a-holes. I think it's because it's nature's way of ensuring that you have success. That there is a built-in desire to live, to survive. And you don't do it by giving trophies to the team that came in last place. This all began in the 80s. I was the first affected patient zero of this whole thing. And I was really lucky that my parents came from a conservative European background where this was total nonsense. I remember I came home one time and said, Mom, I know this test result here isn't really that good, but I spoke to my teacher and she told me to not worry, that she didn't want to get down on my self-esteem. And my mom just stood up and she goes, well, I don't give a bleep about your self-esteem. I care about you getting an A on this test. And I know, she said, I know you can do it. So bring home some A's, please. Or else. Do you see the difference? How horribly patronizing it is of a parent to know their kid actually can do better, but still compliment him for a failure. This is one of the things, in my view, that creates it literally wastes tremendous human potential. Where will the next Mozarts come from? The next Steve Jobs? The great innovators? The rascals? The pirates? The rogues? Who've literally made this world better? I don't think they're going to come from a product of being handed, you know, trophies and ribbons and you know, two thumbs up and a pat on the back for not succeeding. What drove me to success, I think, or whatever success I have, is a total horrifying fear of failing. And my parents, from a very early age, made it clear to me that if I didn't succeed, I was on my own. There's some good examples of this. And again, the old expression applies here, that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. All of this stuff, in my opinion, comes from good intentions. The helicopter parents out there that you and I both know, or maybe that we are, certainly by our parents and our grandparents' standards, we mean well, but it isn't for the better. And we have to, I think this is a great time right now when the kids are kind of in and out of school, you know, out for the Thanksgiving holiday, maybe off, back in school for a couple weeks and then off for Christmas. This is a great time for us to reexamine how we parent these kids. And I want to hear when we come back from the break, I have some suggestions. I have some actual concrete recommendations for things that we should do as parents or could try to do as parents that will help our kids become better equipped for the life that is going to follow. We want children who are competitive. We want children who are driven to succeed. We want open-mindedness. We want intellectual flexibility. None of this comes from being coddled, from being told, Johnny, you are so great, even when they're not. And by constantly providing authority figures to resolve any conflict. We don't want that kind of moral dependency. That's what sociologists call it. Moral dependency. And like I mentioned last hour, we definitely, and one of the big things here is unsupervised play, giving kids time away from parents, adults, to go and play. And I realize, and by the way, a lot of this is very media driven. There is totally, and I want to talk about this too. There unsubstantiated fear of bad things happening to your kids. Because like crime statistics, for example, dropping years since the 1960s. This is all very, very well-known documented stuff. I'll give you an example of that when we come back. So even if you don't have kids, this is all interesting and relevant because sooner or later, you will come in contact with somebody who has been, I will say, perverted or damaged or handicapped by this approach to child rearing. You're going to run into them as a young adult, as an employee, coworker, as somebody providing a service, as a doctor, God forbid. And you're going to go, where the heck did that person come from? And then you go, oh yeah, I listen to Sam Nation. I know exactly where they come from. I'm calling their parents and yelling at them. All right, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
Talk Radio. Talk Radio.
790 KABC.
By the way, it's Thanksgiving, so I have a great reminder here from all of us at Sam Nation. It is time for you to buy an ugly sweater. Actually, you're probably almost overdue to buy your ugly sweater. We at the office, we do this every year right before Christmas. We do an ugly sweater, casual Friday. And I wear the same one every year. I have this clothing brand that has dachshunds on it. Wiener dogs I love dachshunds. And our beloved Lucy was a miniature long-haired dachshund. So I had this multicolored, really just funny sweater that my mom gave me. My mom thought it was beautiful. I think it's just an ugly sweater, but cute. Mom, it was cute. Thank you for the sweater. So we stitched a little on the tip of the dachshund. No, dachshund's nose, because it's not a Christmas sweater. I put a little red fuzzball, so it looks like a Rudolph, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Dachshund. Is that cheating? That's not really a Christmas sweater, but it's that's the one I wear every year. All righty. Kids and our irrational fear that they are going to get hurt, which in turn drives us to be helicopter parents, which results in our kids never being allowed to make mistakes, to trip and fall, to hurt themselves, to fix their own problems, solve their own conflicts, and then eventually they turn into totally helpless, wimpy adults. How's that for a run-on sentence? Did you know, by the way, in 2011, Reason cited these statistics, in 2011, 9 kids were kidnapped and murdered. Now, I get it. We don't, if you're a parent, this is like the most unspeakable, unimaginable thing to have happen. Got it. That same year, 1,140 kids were killed in car accidents driving with their parents. Think about that. You're the one driving the kid to every activity. You're the one helicoptering them, you know, all around to everything. You don't let them walk to school. What is statistically, how many times more likely are you to die in the car? I know, but what I'm getting at is that our one of the reasons that we don't let our kids play outside is because. So most of us that are parents right now remember the days of eating cereal in the morning and looking, staring at that milk carton. Do you know what I'm talking about? Altadena, Knutson, whatever. This is all before we had soy milk. We had real milk when I was growing up. Nobody was lactose intolerant. That nonsense didn't exist. I don't know. I don't know what's up with all these different intolerances and I know. I mean, it's probably real. I'm not mocking your disability. I'm not, but I'm just saying. Life used to be simpler. We didn't have all these allergies. So we'd look at the carton of milk eating our cereal. I mean, because we were too lazy, of course, to put the milk back in the fridge right away. Besides, you might have another bowl and would need more milk. Aha! And do you remember what was on those milk cartons? On the back of every damn milk carton was some horrible-looking picture of a smiling kid with bad bangs. And it was, you know, little Joey Smith, missing since and a date, last seen, his parents miss you, come home, Joey, do you know anything about this? And the impression we got every morning was that the kids left and right were being kidnapped and murdered. So am I terrified of my kid getting kidnapped and murdered? Yes, 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 I am. But, you know, they can get hurt other ways, too. And you can't protect them from everything. And statistically, your child is far more likely to survive their childhood than not. And so we as parents have to do what's right for them in case of survival. Right? We have to think about their post-survival. Stuff, really. It's that basic. My God. All right. We got the news up next. Don't go anywhere. More on this topic when I come back.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Happy, happy Thanksgiving. Hope that turkey is settling well in your l'estomac. That is French for stomach. One of the first phrases I ever learned in French, by the way, by Sam Nation here. Sam Rajofsky live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. One of the first phrases that I thought was so funny in French is "Tu as les yeux plus grands que l'estomac," which means your eyes are greater than your stomach. I thought that was so funny, right? I mean, somehow it was funnier in French. I don't know if that's how you feel right now, that your eyes were greater than your stomach, but my guess is your stomach is pretty great right now. Make your stomach great again should be the motto of today. I want to make childhood in America great again. Can we do that? Help me do that this holiday season. I want our kids to be just a little more independent going into 2018. The problem here, by the way, the self-esteem movement. Do you know what it created? The self-esteem movement of the 1980s has created the self-space era of current time. What did I say? Safe space. I misspoke. This is why producer Robbie is here, paying attention. The safe space, you know, nonsense, BS that's going on college campuses. It all started with the feel-good stuff in the 80s and 90s with self-esteem. And I'll tell you why. Right now in college, what is the measure by which someone's speech is determined to be offensive? Is it... We'll do multiple choice. Can we do multiple choice? Is it A, the speaker's intent? Is it B, based on a reasonable person standard? Or C, based on the feelings of the injured party? Well, it shouldn't be C. The answer should not be C. Because guess what? Some people are irrationally and unreasonably sensitive. In court, thank goodness, so far at least, in court, all of these things are based on, generally speaking, are based on a reasonable person standard, which is described not based on how you say it makes you feel or how offensive you found something, but how members of your community generally would feel about it. So the jury has to sit, but this is practically, I'm just giving you a little bit of how these things are determined. You're thinking, well, how do you determine that? Easy. The jury goes into the deliberation room and they decide, would we find this offensive? Some people do, some people don't. Based on that, they come up with it. That's what I'm told when we poll juries after a trial. That's what I'm generally told how they solve that problem. But not on college campuses, no. If I am a feelings administrator at Berkeley or wherever, and I have a student who has just been pimp-slapped with some horribly offensive speech, something maybe along the lines of, did you know that African Americans were lynched even during the civil rights era? And it's posed as a question, as full of appalling just shock that such a despicable, horrible, disgusting thing could happen in this country. But I failed to provide a trigger warning. What happens then? It's all based on the person who's reporting the speech who heard it, how they feel. And the person who said it needs to apologize based on that. So basically, again, putting on my God-loving, you know, America-loving hat here, what do I want from us? I want us to be a country that embraces our Constitution. And we are we've raised now several generations of people who won't think that the First Amendment is as important and as absolute as it is and as it was always intended. That's scary. Don't go anywhere. More on this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation Live on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Talk Radio.
790 KABC.
Happy Thanksgiving from Sweet James Bergner, your friendly attorney, and his team of lawyers and staff that are here to help. And they all want to wish you guys, all of you, a happy holiday. They're just a great sponsors for the program, great friends. And I want to tell you, here's the most important thing. During the holidays, things will happen. There's crazy drivers out there. You know, there's things going on. What you don't want to have happen, that if something goes wrong, don't let it ruin your holidays. Have James and his team take care of it for you. Don't try doing it yourself. Don't try making calls to the insurance companies. You don't want to deal with the Grinch. Deal with James instead. So much easier. His phone number, it's so easy to remember that even I, from time to time, remember it here on the program. 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021. He's got a website, too. James, no, oh my goodness. SweetJames.com. I love it. Happy Thanksgiving, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio 790 KABC. I think that just tipped to you that I've already had my turkey. Anyway, this is what radio is all about. It's not perfect, but it's fun. When I mentioned to you that colleges today, individual feelings are what matter in these investigations into hurt feelings, it's not about what reasonable people think, it's not about what the intent of the speaker is. There was a guy at Purdue University in 2008, his name is Keith Sampson. He was found guilty of racial harassment. Now that, by the way, kind of rough making it in the world. Did he get kicked out of school? Well, anyway, he got guilty. We don't know if he got kicked out of school, but he got fired from his school job. And in his record, in his university record, is a guilty verdict of racial harassment. That can't be good. It's got to be like a black mark, right? Big time. Pun unintended. Anyway, the book, here's what, do you know how he got that charge? He had a book on Notre Dame versus the Klan, how the Fighting Irish defended the Ku Klux Klan. Yes, defeated. What did I say? I totally ruined it then. Okay, let me back up here so everybody understands that. Yeah, that could be a real problem. No, the book said Notre Dame versus the Klan, how the Fighting Irish defeated the Ku Klux Klan. In other words, a book about how Notre Dame fought and won against the Klan. Fine, there you have it. So the theme of the book is pro-equality, negative on, you know, on racist, violent bigots. Well, guess what? Somebody, some student saw Keith Sampson carrying this book and was offended, was triggered. Their feelings were hurt. And that alone resulted in his a guilty finding by the school, by Purdue University, of racial harassment back in 2008. This stuff exists. And this, by the way, some of these administrators are the same people who are responsible for the BS nonsense that wrote the books on child parenting, you know, the smart books, or that wrote articles, scholarly articles for Parenting Magazine. Speaking of Parents Magazine, a few years back, there was an article there that opined, your child's old enough to stay home briefly and often does, but is it okay to leave her and her playmate home while you dash to the dry cleaner? Absolutely not, the magazine said. Take your kids with you or save your errand for another time. After all, you want to make sure that no one's feelings get too hurt if there's a squabble. That is literally what this article said, advice it gave to parents. You want to make sure that no one's hurt. Not from, you know, a burning stove or, you know, a meteor hitting the house, but if there's a squabble, if there is a conflict. You see how the same people writing these articles are now writing the rules at the universities and are putting a guy like Keith Sampson through hell simply for carrying a book that is anti-Klan? Guilty of racial harassment. Make sure that no one's feelings get too hurt. That is the guiding principle of today's youth leaders. Crazy. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
Talk radio.
790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, live on Talk Radio, 790 KABC. And in talking about child rearing, I heard the other day on the radio a coach, this guy was older, but I heard him say that discipline is something you do for someone, not to someone. This was said in a coaching, you know, athletes context. But it applies to kids. You know, part of the same self-esteem movement is you don't ever discipline your child and you only use positive reinforcement. I wouldn't tell me what positive reinforcement is. I know what it is. It's you give a reward for successes. But that's not how the world works. You don't get a reward for not killing people. Okay? The state, the government does not give you a reward for paying your taxes. Guess what they do? They put you in jail if you kill somebody. They put you in jail if you don't pay your taxes. It's so funny. On one hand, in this crazy now, just blossoming explosion of sex harassment accusations. You're guilty of with an accusation alone. We want to have hyper-regulation. You can't do or, you know, say anything to any woman. You can't even look at her. God, oh my gosh, she looked at me. Help! But with our kids, we don't want to ever discipline them. But when these kids turn into adults, I mean, we want to discipline them for every possible, even imaginary accusation or infraction. See, the world is literally upside down. You've got to decide. Liberals, wake up. You've got to figure out which way do you want it. I'm sorry. In a world where parents regulate everything, kids are not going to learn their boundaries. They're going to learn their boundaries by getting told no and having conflicts arise in their peer group, among their peers. Parenting, this is what I want to get into here, just as my closing argument on this topic, is when parents get involved, generally the conflicts and problems facing their child get bigger, right? Because parents will look at things in a more complex way, and they turn molehills into mountains, right? And that, my friends, is not good. The illustrative example is when your kid has a conflict at school, and as soon as the parents hold a meeting with the principal and hold a meeting with the other kid's parents, what happens? A problem where both parents should have told their respective kids, hey, go to school and work it out with Johnny and get over it. And by the way, let's talk about it. What's the problem? What's going on? Give them some advice. Give them some direction, but let them solve it. The problem stays far more basic. It stays simple, and your kid is given the opportunity to make it work out. The other thing is, there's this desire for immediacy. We live in a world of cell phones and technology that produces everything at the click of a button. Amazon, you order something on your phone, it shows up on your doorstep the next day sometimes. Look, all of this, we think that problems go away immediately, and they don't. Some conflicts in elementary school take years to resolve. Your kid's there for, K through 12 in the same district. And there can be a 2-year period where your son or daughter has a conflict with another kid. It doesn't mean that the kid's parents are evil. It doesn't mean that the kid is evil. It doesn't mean that your kid is 100% right. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means that you need to give your kid some space. Let them fix it. You'll be surprised with what happens. All right, happy, happy Thanksgiving. And this was fun. I loved it. Don't eat too much turkey. Or do. All right, talk to you soon. Sam Rogowski, over and out.